Hello?
That was a cool thing about the 80s, you know, like, all those movies were like that.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you one way or another.
Every one of my games, I try to do something brand new.
One way or another, I'm gonna see you.
Best time to get someone, man, when they're well fed and had a couple of wines. Welcome to the Retro Project Podcast. My name is Steve and I am your host. Now today is the third and final part of our chat with Warren Robinette. Now Warren will be with us in just one moment. Until then, I would like to let you know where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter at Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Retro Project Pod. And you can send us an email to theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Now, stay tuned at the end of this episode to find out who next week's guest is. You can download the first two parts of our chat with Warren from iTunes. You can also find any of our older episodes there. And if you're there and you like the show, please leave a review. It takes 30 seconds and it really, really does help the show. So, that's enough for me. Now, Mr. Warren Robinette.
So I spent about a year in total, calendar year, working on Adventure, roughly. Because I started it when I finished Slot Racers, which would have been something like April 1978. And I finished it in about a year later. But, you know, when you're 27, 28, a year seems like a longer time than when you're older. It seemed like... Just thinking back on it, it seemed like I was working on it for a long time because I had a lot of problems to solve and it took time to have good ideas to solve some of these problems. It's a pretty hard design problem and I'm pretty pleased with the solutions I came up with and it just took time. But if we roll back the clock to something like February 1979, about two months before I finally handed in the final version. I was pretty pleased with it. There were people, internal testers that liked to play all the games under development and they would give you feedback on it. The internal people seemed to like Adventure quite a bit. But what I had at that point, 2 months before I finished it, was what we now call level two. Okay? There was no level one. There was no level three. At that point, what I realized was level two was too hard for a beginner because there's the bat and a dragon that showed up right at the beginning and a beginner just could not deal with that. So I decided to have two games instead of one. And the first game was a beginner's level and I made a simplified game world, took away the bat. I took away the red dragon. I took away the interior of the complicated interiors of the castle, took away the catacombs with the fog of war thing. So I just simplified it to where you had the two yellow and the green dragon, which were a little bit easier to deal with. Only two dragons, and they were the two slower ones. So you could run away from them and escape. And no bats. Simplified game world. And a kind of a passive beginning where, you know, when you start up in level one, you're in the yellow castle room. You're the square. The gate is shut. The key is right up there on the corner on the left side. And nothing happens. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Till the game doesn't start.
That's right. Because nobody had ever seen a game like this before. And Larry Kaplan, he was my original boss at Atari, one of the founders of Activision. He was pretty influential there at Atari. And there's a thing he said that stuck in my mind. He said, people don't read manuals. They should be able to figure out one of these video games without looking at the manual. And I thought that made a lot of sense. So for Adventure, I wanted a kid to be able to figure it out without looking at the manual. When it started out, you'd see this castle shape. People could see that it was a castle and had this black gate that was down. They might go run in and run into it, but nothing happened. And then there And there's nothing else in that room except the key. And they probably didn't even recognize that the door at the bottom of the room was a door. But there's not. But you could move around, and the walls blocked you. So you could go up on the right side and just run into some walls, but that's all. And then you could go up on the left side, and if you ran into the key, you picked it up. So I set that up to sort of force the player to discover that he could pick things up. That makes sense?
Absolutely. So it's almost like you've invented the world's first tutorial for a game.
Well, it was a tutorial with no words. And then that space in there, if you can't go into the Yellow Castle, let's say you haven't picked up the key yet. You've just bounced around in there. You run into the walls on the left and the right. You go up as far as you can on the left and the right. And then most people try to go through the little opening down at the bottom, and then they'd pop into a new room. Mm-hmm. So that sort of forced them to discover that you could move from screen to screen. And it wasn't perfect. It got them started moving from screen to screen. And then once they were in that room below the Yellow Castle, they could go off to the left or right side. And once you change rooms twice, you're starting to get the idea that they were puzzled usually, but they're starting to get the idea that you could move from place to place. And if you went off to the left of that room below the Yellow Castle, there's a dragon there and it would start chasing you, right? Once you got chased from screen to screen by the dragon, then you really start to understand that there was a big space you could move through, right?
Yep.
Well, so making the simplified level one that was set up for beginners so you could discover that you could pick up objects and drop them and discover you could move from room to room, that was kind of necessary because nobody had ever seen a game like that before. That makes sense?
Absolutely. You're teaching someone by doing rather than by telling.
Yes. It's harder than you might think to get it set up to where people will actually... You gotta constrain them. You gotta give them some degrees of freedom, but not too many. It's trickier than you might think to get them to discover how to do these things they've never done before. But you've played Adventure, so you've seen how I did it. And then the other thing that I think you might find interesting is, so I already had level two basically as is, and I made the constrained world that's level one, and then it seemed to me that people who played level two, after they'd beaten it, you could just, if you started level two again, you could just do the same thing again. It seemed like it wasn't that much fun for an experienced player. And that's when I had the idea to add random placement of the objects at the beginning of level three.
Yep.
I mean, you know this because you played Adventure lots of times, sounds like. Well, you like it because it randomly places the objects. Do you think it's truly random? Do you have any...
I start it up, and I just straight away get lost into it. I don't analyze it as a game the way that I may other games. But I've never really analyzed whether it's actually truly, truly random or not.
Well, would you like to hear a little of the backstory?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Well, so I thought that level two, where it starts with all the objects in the same position every time, was just not interesting for players who had already beaten it. And so I wanted random object positioning. But I had some pretty strong opinions about randomness. I thought that having a game which randomly generated a monster every so often was, I thought it was a very lazy and bad way to design a video game, because there's some variety, yes, but it's a kind of variety that has no pattern. There's nothing to understand. I thought the variety that I had in Adventure, where I had this complicated network of rooms, and if the dragons were cruising around, sometimes they could get stuck in a loop in some part of the game world, and then something would jog them out of that particular pattern, and you wouldn't see them for a long time, and then all of a sudden you'd see all three of them. The reason that was happening is because the dragons, all three, would be moving and going in some direction, or they might have found an object they were attracted to and be guarding it. That happens sometimes. But they weren't guarding something. They were just moving around. But they'd be going, and each one of them would be going in one of eight directions, just depending on what it had seen last. And the network of rooms in Adventure was, there were 30 rooms, and it was a complicated network. So considering there were three dragons, each of which could be going in eight different directions, and they could get stuck in repetitive patterns if they started from particular points going in certain directions. So that gave a lot of possibilities for different, it just had a lot of variety, and it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The possibilities of what can actually happen.
Yeah, so anyway, I just did not think that a random number generator that would spit out a new dragon, let's say, every so often, depending on what the random number generator came out with. For some reason, I was just highly prejudiced against that. So I decided I wanted randomness only at the beginning of the game. Every one of those dragons has an algorithm that controls its behavior, and it's deterministic. The dragons and the bats sort of have perception, you might say. They, mm-hmm. In a sense, they can see objects, okay? And their behavior is dependent on which objects are on their list to respond to, okay? So there's no randomness in their behavior. They're going to do what they're going to do based on the little algorithm that's in there. And I just have made a decision to not have any randomness except at the beginning of level three. So positioning of the objects is random.
Yeah.
The positioning of the objects is random. And then they're just following their usual algorithms. But so that's one thing I want to tell you, is that there's no randomness after that. But second, I didn't have much memory left at the time that I was doing this. Just a few hundred bytes. And it's pretty tight. And I needed to create a random number generator that would help, you know, because if you're going to randomly position the objects, you need a source of random numbers to decide where to put the objects, right? Mm-hmm. And I was also aware that if I had a locked yellow castle, let's say, and my random positioning algorithm put the yellow key inside the yellow castle, that would be bad. There'd be no way to win, right? Well, guess what? Two things went wrong. One thing that went wrong was the first random number positioning algorithm I came up with, it had bugs in it. I just didn't understand the algorithm I was trying to use. It was a sort of a mathematical one. What I did instead was I just used, you know, the you know what attract mode is on the 2600?
Basically when you're not playing
the
game.
The colors go to a darker shade. Well, so to implement that, you had to have a 2-byte counter, okay? Because 1-byte counter wasn't enough. Counting up to 256 frames was not enough, okay? You had to have a counter that was incremented every frame, and then with a 2-byte counter, it could count up to a big enough number that it would take 20 minutes or something before it started going through the color cycling. So what I did was I just took the lower byte of that frame counter that I already had, and I just used that for my random number. So you know how many variations there are in level 3?
256.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you turn on the 2600, the very first routine clears all of memory. So every variable that you didn't explicitly set some other value has zero in it, okay? So, and that includes the lower byte of the frame counter. So it starts counting at zero, and it counts every frame. You know, zero, one, two, three, four, five, okay. And so, and when it gets to 255, it wraps around a zero again. So there's, you know, because it's an 8-bit byte, and,
yep.
And there are 256 possibilities. So that's how many, and that would be, you could call that the seed, let's say, for the, well, it's just a random number. It's just a byte, and it gets incremented every frame. And so what determines which of those 256 layouts of the objects you get is just how many frames have elapsed since you turned on the 2600. So, for example,
yeah.
You turned on the 2600 and then immediately got to level 3 and started the game. It's not that, I mean, to get to level 3, you got to push one switch twice, right?
Yep.
And then to start the game, you have to push another switch. So that's probably going to take you the better part of a second. So it's not going to be that easy to do it quickly. But if you could just, let's say, start a stopwatch when you turn on the 2600 and then make sure that you started level 3 at exactly 1 second, let's say you could do it within a tenth of a second, well, you'd get a relatively small set of starting positions for level three. If you could come close to the starting level three exactly 1 second after you turn on the 2600, you see what I mean? For somebody that knew this.
If you were able to basically time properly, you could get the same level three over and over and over if you were aware of this timing.
That's right. And one other thing is, I think it's Adventure actually had a main loop that lasted 3 frames. So the graphics frames happen every 60th of a second, but the update routine, if you know what I'm talking about, completes every 1/20th of a second. So it was actually counting 1/20th of a second.
I assume that also means, like, if I'm playing a game and I hit game reset and I go into the next game, it's been counting since I reset the game, but since I turned the Atari on.
That's right. That counter just counts forever.
Yeah, so dependent on how long my first game has lasted for.
Yeah, that's right. No, well, my thinking was nobody's going to be able to keep track of how many 20ths of a second have elapsed since they turned on the 2600.
Yeah.
Maybe a robot could, but not a human. But with that knowledge, embedded in your head, though, it is conceivable that you could exercise some control over which one of those, quote, random levels that you end up with.
I'm a touch too lazy to go to all of that.
Yeah.
It seems like every great thing about Adventure was you simply solving a problem and moving on to the next problem and solving that problem.
Yes.
You were trying to solve.
Yes, and having been given enough time, nobody was demanding that I turn it in. So I was lucky that George hated it. He wasn't asking me when I was going to finish Adventure. He hoped it would go away. Well, that allowed me to make it better, you see.
Yeah, for sure.
It was a full-term baby, you might say. The total 9 months, and the gestation period was about the same as a baby, come to think of it. A little more than 9 months, but there were 3 months when I didn't work on it.
Not every baby's born on time.
Yeah.
Let's finish up.
Okay.
When you get to talk to someone whose work you've admired for a long time, you take the opportunity to say what you've always wanted to say. I hope you take this with the exact admiration that it's meant. Fuck the bat, you know?
Okay.
And I hope but
Adventure wouldn't have been as good without the bat, because...
That's exactly it. So I really hope that you understand the impact that this game had.
Well, thank you. You know, the truth is I didn't understand how much impact it had for a long time, because Atari didn't forward any fan mail letters to me, and nobody could, before the internet, it was hard to contact people. So there were 15 years that went by where nobody contacted me. And I thought that nobody cared about the old video games from the early days. So I was off doing other things, and it was an interesting part of my early years as a programmer, but I really didn't think let's just say in the 90s, I didn't think anybody cared about the old video games. So it's kind of nice to find out that Venture still has some fans. I would not have guessed that would happen 40 years ago.
You're still picking it up today because of the way that retro gaming has come back, and because of the ease of being able to get these things now. It's not a matter of hunting down the cartridges in a thrift shop. We've got things like, you know, the Atari Flashback and all of those kind of ways to be able to do it.
And emulators.
Yeah,
emulators.
It means that anyone with even a passing interest in this kind of genre is going to be a worthy work, and that's not going to end anytime soon. You know, you are one of the Mount Rushmore of video games, as I'd like to say.
That's funny.
Put it this way: not on this Rushmore.
Well, thank you.
So I
hope you got what you wanted from this.
Oh man, I've enjoyed every single moment of it, man. It has been fantastic. But if people want to know a little bit more about your stuff, you do have a website.
WarrenRobinette.com. Yeah.
Are you a social media guy?
No, I'm not. I'm not actually. I don't care much for social media. Yeah. Especially now that I've seen what Trump's done with it.
Warren, honestly, man, thank you so much for your time. I have had an absolute blast.
Good. You know what? I should have said, Did I tell you I've been working on a book about adventure for the last few years?
No, if you want
to,
you can.
So about 3 years ago, I decided to write a book about adventure. I decided that I'm not getting any younger. I'm 66 now, and since it was a one-person project, there was nobody but me that could explain why I made certain choices. I thought I could do it in about 6 months, but here it is 3 years later, and I'm still working on it. And the one book turned into two books. So one book is the political story about navigating those political currents, and it's a non-technical story for general readers. It's called Making the Dragon. It's not finished yet, but I have a fairly complete version. I'm trying to get it finished as fast as I can. But anyway, that's the political story, Making the Dragon. And then the technical story is called The Annotated Adventure. And I have a pretty complete draft of that also. It contains the complete source code for that, and it's intended for programmers, and it's about how I implemented it, which was hard. So those are sort of two different aspects of the design of adventure, and hopefully they'll be available for sale before too long. But I guess I don't think I'm really a perfectionist, but I do have a certain level of quality that I strive for, and the books haven't quite gotten there yet.
It's a great title, you know.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, well, which one? The dragon.
You like Making the Dragon?
I like Making the Dragon. Because, I mean, really, there's only two ways you could go with it. It's either Making the Dragon or Frowned Upon by George.
You know, I don't want to put the spotlight on him.
I had a ball a few years ago reading Racing the Beam.
Oh, yeah. If you're interested, send me an email, and if you would be willing to give me some feedback, I could send you copy of one or both of them.
Oh man, I would devour those. I've had a blast, man, and I'll be in contact with you in the next few days.
All right. Nice talking to you, Steve. I enjoyed it.
And that is the end of our three-part chat with Warren Robinette. Warren was an amazing guest. He pulled no punches. He told it as it was, and some of his stories were just fantastic. So big thanks to Warren for being on the show. Now, our next guest will be Mr. Stan Bush. Now, you'll know Stan from projects such as the Transformers the Movie, Bloodsport, The Wraith, Kickboxer. He's also an Emmy Award winner. So stick around for our chat with Stan. Now, until then, I'd like to let you know where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter at The Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook at The Retro Project Pod. And if you'd like to send us an email, we would love to hear from you. You can send that to theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. You can also find all of our episodes on iTunes. We're now on Spotify as well. So if you go there and you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It really does help the show. Until next time, thank you for listening, and this has been the Retro Project Podcast.